Your dad was John McCain.
Yes. My dad was a huge music fan. I'm going to tell you right now, my dad loved Willie Nelson. And people are like, you can't say you like Willie Nelson because he dodged his taxes, blah, blah, blah. Well, he loved Willie Nelson. He did.
Everybody thinks they can do it. How can I become a professional wrestler? You really can't.
I pulled out the gun and I shot two times.
We have a complicated family. We were all raised to argue with each other with intensity, with passion, but also to love each other.
This is WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome to WTMJ Conversations. I'm your host, Libby Collins. The Milwaukee Domes have faced a crisis for years. Some say they're obsolete. Others want to restore them to their former glory and preserve them for future generations. Joining us is Krista Beal Dieffenbach. She's the CEO of the Milwaukee Domes Alliance. And Krista, I don't think a lot of people are aware of the history of the domes. How did it all begin?
A lot of people don't realize that this is the second public conservatory located in Mitchell Park. Mitchell Park itself is one of the original six Milwaukee County parks. It's got a long history of beautiful public gardens. A lot of people maybe remember there used to be some sunken gardens in the park. There's also a dance pavilion. You could take boat rides across the lagoon. And then there was this traditional Victorian-style conservatory that was in the park. It needed to be raised back in the 1950s. It had maintenance challenges, and at that point, Milwaukee County decided it would do a competition to bring back a conservatory, but to do something that is special in all the world. So there was over 30 architects who submitted plans, and the one that was selected was a Donald Grebe. He was the architect here from Milwaukee Design. So Donald Grebe was known for pushing the envelope. He was known for doing things that nobody else had tried, and that's certainly what he did with the Mitchell Park domes. You have these three unique, what are called conoidal-shaped domes.
They look like beehives.
They do, and they were actually fashioned off of beehives.
Seriously?
Yes. So one of the things so special is it's like the original what's called biophilic design, which means that you're taking the outdoors and nature and building it, infusing it into your design. Because the fact is, nature makes us as human beings happier. Connection to nature is really important to our emotional and physical well-being. That is how, even though biophilic design in the 50s and 60s wasn't a term, but that's really what he did. And so the shape of the domes themselves are actually designed off of a beehive. He did it for a few different reasons. One of them was that it would shed the snow load. So when it would snow in Wisconsin, it would roll off the sides of the domes and go to the ground beneath. It also allowed for much larger species to be in each of the domes. So you might remember in the tropical dome, we have a Canary Island date palm that is over 70 feet tall. That is only possible because of this unique shape of the domes. And then finally, it allowed for maximum sunlight to penetrate, which was important because it allowed us to have warm climate ecosystems represented in a cold climate state.
Was there any place else in the country or the world that was similar to this, or was this totally unique at that time?
It was completely unique. There are conservatories that are called standard geodesic. So if you think about turning a cereal bowl upside down, that is what a typical dome-shaped glass house would look like. And, you know, there are ones that are used as botanical gardens, and there's ones used for all different purposes, but they're not very tall at their center. So his was so unique in that he created this conoidal-shaped dome, and that would allow, again, for those larger species.
How important is that particular construction design in the preservation of those plants?
Very important in that it allows for those larger plants to grow. So we have, you know, these amazing elephant ear fig trees. And, you know, they can grow to be 7-8 feet in your home, but ours are 25 feet tall. And we're able to have those larger species because of that unique shape. It is also one of a kind in the world. So Donald Grebe patented his design. And so there hasn't been any created since.
Can you explain the expansion and the contraction of the aluminum framing?
So some of the challenges facing the domes are wrapped up in the design of it. So just like you would have to replace the windows in your home after 50, 60 years, we're in this similar situation with the domes. Unfortunately, we have 6,500 panes of glass. So
it's that many.
Yeah, so it's a large project. But, you know, there is this expand and contract that happens with glass. So a lot of people don't realize glass is actually a liquid. And inside of the glass is this wire mesh that's steel. They designed it that way because back in the 60s, we didn't have tempered glass. So they wanted to protect our guests. If one of the panes of glass were to crack, then it wouldn't, you know, break into a million pieces and fall either on their guests or into our gardens. So they were designed that way for a reason. Unfortunately, when liquid expands and contracts, it will shift and move, but the steel inside, it's not a liquid and it will not expand and contract. So it tries to stay solid, right? Like they're fighting against each other. And that has created an issue with the glass in that we have 700 broken panes of glass.
Are they cracked or are they completely broken?
They're cracked because of that expansion and contraction that happens just naturally. Now, with the aluminum itself, it was actually an incredibly innovative design in that it was meant to wick water away from the domes and send them down to either on the inside to the gardens beneath or on the outside to what's kind of a moat that encircles each of the domes. So the next time your listeners come and visit the domes, take a peek, stop at the outside first and appreciate our beautiful design. But then you'll also notice a few other elements. And one is there is a moat that encircles each dome. And that's where the water was supposed to drain to and then be sent away from the domes. The aluminum piping system never quite performed as anticipated. It got clogged very quickly. And at this point, it does expand and contract along with the glass, but it's not problematic. The challenge is the broken seals. Just like in your home, if there was a broken seal where the glass was not set right next to a seal that's then set right next to what would be your window frame, then air would come in or water would come in. So for us, when it rains outside, it rains in the domes. And that is because of those broken seals. And so part of this project is, yes, replacing the 6,500 panes of glass, but it's also replacing those seals so that we stop the water infiltration from happening.
The design has problems.
Well, it would be the same case with any glass house. Every glass house that exists, you would need to replace the glass in them, just like we do with our homes. That's not a problem with the construction. The aluminum piping was more about, so Donald Grebe really disliked the idea of having condensation on the inside of conservatories, botanical gardens that were in glass houses. He disliked the dripping piece of it, where it's just, you know, when you are in the tropical dome, we're misting, it's a very humid environment, there's going to be droplets of water falling from the inside. That is just typical. He was trying to manage that. So that wicking system was more about keeping those droplets of water from ever hitting our guests. It did not perform as expected. And so if he were to do it over, he probably would choose something different.
That's what I'm wondering. Did he anticipate any of the issues that we're seeing today, or did he write anything down or share anything with anybody that if this happens, this is what needs to be done?
Well, one of the things I think is really important to state is that the domes are actually structurally sound. They will outlive us all. If we did nothing, they would continue to be there and standing on our horizon for generations to come. They just wouldn't be able to be used for any purpose. So what we're really having to address is the water infiltration. We have to stop that from coming in, just like you wouldn't want it pouring into your home. We don't want it pouring into the domes. And so for this solution, we need to, most importantly, replace the seals.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations,
we have images from that time where there's just lines and lines of people.
Krista Beal Diefenbach talks about a First Lady's visit to the Milwaukee Domes.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back. I'm Libby Collins. We're talking with Krista Beal Diefenbach. She's the CEO of the Milwaukee Domes Alliance. I want to go back a little bit to the history of the domes, because was it 1965? Lady Bird Johnson actually dedicated the domes. That must have been a big deal.
Yes, it was. We have images from that time where there's just lines and lines of people. She dedicated just the show dome. So the domes were actually built in phases. Milwaukee County had chosen to do it that way because they could stretch out the financial resources that they were putting into this project and they wouldn't have to bond beyond the cap. And so they opened them in phases. And so the first dome to open was the show dome, opened in 1964, dedicated in 1965 by, as you said, Lady Bird Johnson.
Have you talked to anybody who actually was there?
I have met a few people who...
What are your memories?
That it was incredibly special, that they knew this was a moment in time that would just be stamped in their brain and they would take with them forever because our conservatory is a national treasure.
Well, and part of it is that Lady Bird Johnson, her mission was beautification.
That's right. And you know what's interesting is that if you look at the original charter for the domes and why Milwaukee County wanted to create it, they wanted to, yes, create beauty, but also that connection to nature. And they wanted to do it so that people who couldn't afford to travel the world would still have access to these amazing plants and would still be able to experience them. And I love that equitable access piece of it. Like, this is for everyone who, regardless of if you're able to go to the tropics, you can experience the tropics. And I think that's what's really interesting to me. It's the reason why Donald Grebe designed the actual gardens in the way he did. You walk into the tropical dome and it's like you've stepped into a jungle. And it was designed in that way very intentionally because they wanted to recreate that experience. So if you go to other botanical gardens, you'll see that a lot of times you're more in this elevated space. So you're looking down at the plants, you're up higher and you can view either the plants or the trees from this elevated position. It's less immersive. But ours was created with this idea of you and I are walking through the jungle. And we get to experience that right here in Wisconsin.
There are three domes. You mentioned the one is jungle-like or tropical. What are the others?
So there's the arid dome, which is desert. So we have actually seven deserts of the world represented in that dome. And then we have our show dome. And the show dome is meant to be this opportunity for us to create something new and special for our visitors, which is, you know, why we call it the show dome, because there's all these shows that take place in there. So it transitions five times a year to a different show. Each time we wipe the center of the entire dome down, take it down to the studs, and then we build it back up and put something new and fabulous, which is really important to note because, first of all, that is also unique in all the world. That's in the botanical garden environment is what we call a transition garden. Well, most transition gardens are maybe about the size of this room that we're in right now. But to have that much room dedicated to a new exciting show five times a year, you have to ask yourself, why would the county have dedicated so many resources? And it has been doing that since we opened in the 60s. And of course, it was because they never wanted the domes to be just a tourist destination. They wanted there to be something special, something new for you and me to experience.
How many visitors a year do you have?
This year, we'll have just under 300,000.
Is that comparable to what it had been in years past?
We've really been all over the board. We definitely dipped down. You know, if you look back at the 80s, there were years when we had 500,000 visitors. So definitely more than what we have currently. But we know that with intentional programming, we're going to be able to get back up to that level.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
These look like plants from Dr. Seuss books.
Krista Beal-Diefenbach talks about the Milwaukee Domes collection from Madagascar.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
I'm your host, Libby Collins. Let's return to our conversation with Krista Beal-Diefenbach, the CEO of the Milwaukee Domes Alliance. You mentioned the 80s, and I think it was the mid-80s. You had a very special guest, an ambassador from Madagascar, who came to open a special exhibit.
Yes, absolutely. That's one of our most rare collections is the one from Madagascar. It's one of the largest collections of plants from Madagascar in the entire world. And all of the plants in that collection were donated by the ambassador. And it came from his own private collection. It actually just celebrated its 40-year anniversary. It's what I like to call our Dr. Seuss collection, because if you go in, so this is right at the entryway of the Desert Dome. And if you walk in the Madagascar collection is right there to your left. And it's funny because I think a lot of times people like are just walking right past it and aren't taking a moment to appreciate just how rare this collection truly is, but also how kind of wackadoodle it is as well. These plants are very strange looking.
What do you mean?
That's why I call it the Dr. Seuss collection, because it makes me think that Dr. Seuss wasn't quite as creative as we think of him being, because these look like plants from Dr. Seuss books. They're all kind of weird, strange, just not your typical arid collection. So that's the one thing that a lot of people don't realize with a desert. A desert doesn't mean hot. It's the amount of precipitation that that area receives. So there's cold deserts and there's hot deserts. Well, Madagascar is a desert, but it's one that's on an island in the middle of the ocean. So if you think about it, those plants have to be able to withstand a lot of wind. So they are unique in that they're spindly and they aren't these like large cacti that you think of in our deserts here in the United States. They're definitely have been adapted, right? So nature created them with this idea in mind, well, if we're going to grow plants here, we're going to have to grow ones that can withstand a lot of wind and also don't need the water.
A lot of people are challenged just with houseplants, not to mention if they have a garden outside. I would think when you have as many plants as you have in three different domes, all with different needs, somebody's got to be taking care of these plants all the time. How many people do you have working on this?
The Milwaukee County Park System has 8 full-time horticulturalists, that's the term, who take care of our plants. And that's within the three domes themselves, but then we also have those growing greenhouses. So a lot of people don't realize that with those shows that happen within the show dome, that plant material is grown on site. So we grow it oftentimes from seed. And when you go in there and you see, you know, our holiday show has hundreds of poinsettias, all of those we grew on site, and that was those horticulturalists and them, what they're able to create, it's just amazing.
I want to go back a little bit to some of the issues that the domes have faced. 2006, something happened that really could have compromised those buildings.
There was an explosion at the Falk plant that was felt for miles, which is just incredible to think of. But the domes, they shook considerably, and some of the concrete was compromised. The folks at Falk worked with the Milwaukee County Park System to fix the concrete, to address the issues. And, you know, I think it's actually something really important to note that most buildings would not have fared as well as the domes did.
How do you mean?
So a lot of times people think of the domes as having structural issues or challenges that they aren't structurally sound. And that's something that we've heard throughout the years. Like, oh, well, the domes, can they be saved? Well, the fact is they are incredibly structurally sound because of their shape. So what I've learned in my 4 years on the job is a lot about dome-shaped buildings. The architect, Donald Grebe, actually went on to create many other dome-shaped homes and buildings because he became obsessed with this idea of how a dome-shaped building is so structurally sound. And the reason why, because the wind, as you think about it, it's not like a wall that the wind is hitting up against. It whips around it. I mentioned that the snow load just falls right off the top of it. It's actually being protected from the elements in a lot of ways that other buildings wouldn't be, which is why in hurricane zones, they have started to create dome-shaped homes because they are more structurally sound.
Still ahead on WTMJ Conversations.
Don't jump, don't run, don't climb, and don't ever touch the cacti. But we want to have a space, a yes space for kids.
Krista Beal Diefenbach talks about adding a fourth dome.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
And I'm Libby Collins. Our guest today is Krista Beal Diefenbach. She's the CEO of the Milwaukee Domes Alliance. Let's talk about the structure. We had mentioned the aluminum framing and the sealant and why that's an issue. Is there anything else that needs to be repaired or updated?
Certainly, the mechanicals also need to be updated. Replacing the panes of glass, fixing the seals. We're going to put an aluminum veneer on top of the current aluminum. So that's part of this design, which we did run a pilot study where we replaced 11 panes of glass in the desert dome and then also put an aluminum veneer over the current aluminum, replaced all the seals. And that's been running for almost 3 years. So we know that this is not only possible, it is certainly going to perform as anticipated. So that piece is really good. But then when we get into the mechanicals need to be replaced and upgraded and we need to be more energy efficient, a big part of our mission is to create Earth Ambassadors to help people understand the role that they play in our ecosystem. And so we need to be able to demonstrate that we're not being energy hogs ourselves. Part of that is will happen just naturally with the reglazing effort, but it also gives us this opportunity to look at our mechanicals. And we've been working with We Energies on an energy audit, understanding how we're using energy and how we can do that more efficiently in the future. The other thing that I think is important to note is that it isn't just about putting the domes back the way they were. Because the reality is the domes, the way they were, are not a modern conservatory. So what you would have if we started from scratch and built a new conservatory today, all the amenities and the things that we would have within the facility that would drive at that business model, they don't currently exist in the domes. Yes, we are going to fix the problems, the deferred maintenance, all of those challenges. But then we're going to add many more new amenities that really drive at that business model.
What are some of those amenities?
We're going to expand the gift shop. Our current gift shop is small but mighty, right? It actually generates a pretty significant amount of revenue for us each year. But by doubling the footprint, we're going to be able to do even more in terms of revenue generation. We're also going to make the entryway more accessible and make it easier for people to get in quickly. We're also going to add a new cafe. So, you know, part of what we're looking to do is extend the duration of time that people can spend at the domes. Right now, they come in and they enjoy the gardens. And then if they want to have a cup of coffee or grab a sandwich, they have to go out and go someplace else. So we want to, you know, make this a day-long destination. And to do that, we need to offer concessions. And that will be in the form of a boutique cafe. And then the other pieces is we are adding a fourth dome. It actually already exists. It's just used for like its back of house space. So we use it as a growing greenhouse. It's original to the build. A lot of people don't realize there's a secret fourth dome.
How large is it? Is it comparable to the others?
It is 5,000 square feet. So it's quite large, but if you compare that to the others, they're 16,000 square feet. So about a third of the size. It's tucked behind the show dome and the desert dome. And it's right now used to grow plant material.
What do you want to do with it?
We're going to turn it into what we're calling the Little Sprouts Dome. It is going to be an interactive children's garden that will have all kinds of fun activities and programming geared toward our youngest visitors. And we know that families are a really important market for us. We're always listed as the top 5 most popular family activities in the city. However, we aren't a yes space for kids.
What do you mean a yes space?
So if you think about it, it's don't jump, don't run, don't climb, and don't ever touch the cacti. I can't tell you how many times I do what I call surgery with a little kid who has touched a cactus, and I've gotten very good at getting those little spines out of fingers. But we want to have a space, a yes space for kids, someplace where they can climb and jump and have fun. And so there's going to be this big play structure in the center where kids can climb up, and you know, there'll be plants in there and all sorts of fun programming. So one of the things I haven't talked very much about publicly, but we are going to be adding some additional fauna in the domes. So, you know, we are flora and fauna. We've got a lot of flora, but we do have animal educators right now. So we have about 100 animal educators who live either in the tropical dome, the desert dome, or in the education center. Well, this new future allows us to add a lot more fauna, pun intended. And one of the things we're going to do is have an insectarium that will be in that little Sprouts Dome. So there'll be opportunities for kids to see different types of insects of the world and experience that piece of our ecosystem and understand why, you know, insects are actually really important. We know that they're pollinators, but they also serve a lot of other purposes as well. And so, you know, I always tell people when I give tours, when you see ants outside your home, your first instinct shouldn't be kill them. It should be, let's just make sure they don't come in the home. But they're playing a really important role in terms of the health of our yards and lawns. And, you know, helping people understand that is key to our mission.
It's exciting. But I think a lot of people are wondering, so what's all this going to cost?
That is certainly one thing that, you know, people have asked me about. What will this, and there's been so many numbers thrown out over the years. You know, we're talking decades of studies and suggestions of what this might cost. So the first phase of construction is $115 million. That is everything that we've discussed. Every element, all of the additional programming, all of those new amenities are covered in that. So we're able to fix the domes, you know, make them so that they don't leak and that they're going to be around for generations to come, but then also create all of those new opportunities for our guests. So that first phase, I would say that, you know, one of the strengths of this plan is that it is $115 million is a lot of money. But it's not putting the burden on one entity unduly. So Milwaukee County, as you maybe have heard, they're contributing $30 million toward this effort. Of that $115 million, $30 million is coming from the county. You know, they obviously have a lot of fiscal challenges. And so, you know, your audience might be wondering, you know, why the county would choose to move in this direction. And if you think about it as a return on investment, for every dollar they're putting in, there'll be almost $3 of private funding or other public funding coming to this project. So it is a great return on investment. It also takes the facility off the county's list of obligations for their long run. So part of what's going to happen is Milwaukee Domes Alliance will become the operators of the conservatory. And the county won't be having to cover a deficit budget. Right now, every year, it's putting over $1 million into this endeavor by covering the deficit budget that is part of the Domes operating model currently. But that will all change in the future. So that's their investment. Then if you look at the other pieces of that capital stack, $115 million, you also have tax credit financing. So we are, because it's a historic restoration and there's historic significance, it is, as I mentioned, unique in all the world, but it also was listed as a national treasure for the National Trust of Historic Preservation back in 2017. You know, it is significant, not just for Milwaukee or Milwaukee County or even Wisconsin. It's significant in all the world. Because of that, we're able to secure historic tax credits.
Those are federal monies?
They're both federal and state, and that will be almost $25 million. That will go toward this project.
With the changes that we're seeing in Washington, any chance that you're not going to get the funds that you're projecting?
So both, the two tax credit programs that we are going to be leveraging as part of this capital stack, so that's historic tax credits and new market tax credits, both of those were fully funded in the bill that was released out of D.C.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
The fact that we had all of these contributions coming in was tremendous. There's still a lot of work ahead of us.
Krista Beal-Diefenbach, CEO of the Milwaukee Domes Alliance, is asked, where are you going to get the money?
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back to our conversation with Krista Beal-Diefenbach, CEO of the Milwaukee Domes Alliance. I'm your host, Libby Collins. Now, what about the rest of the money? You've said that it would come from private funds, but what do you mean by that?
So we are doing a capital campaign and asking for the philanthropic community to support this endeavor in the amount of $35 million. So that was part of Milwaukee County's commitment that it would match philanthropic contributions dollar for dollar up to $30 million. And that is the piece of the pie that private philanthropy will be contributing.
And how are you doing with that?
It's going great. So I will say I'm a career fundraiser, so I've been doing this for a long time. And unlike any other project I've ever been involved in, when we started talking about the possibility of doing a capital campaign, donations just started to flow in. I will say, you know, it again, this is atypical. You know, you usually do not get contributions without having a plan that you're working and that you're cultivating these relationships and working, you know, with the philanthropic community, you know, on a long-term plan. So the fact that we, you know, out of the gate had all of these contributions coming in was tremendous. There's still a lot of work that ahead of us. So certainly we are very pleased with how supportive the philanthropic community has been. We did do not one, but two feasibility studies. So in the fundraising world, this is what we do before we head out into a campaign, is that we ask prospective donors if they would be interested in supporting this type of effort. The results of those campaigns both came back very positive. So we know that there's interest and we've already had a lot of successes. For us, this next 2 years is going to be critical. We've got a lot of money to raise and, you know, we've got a great team in place to do it.
What's your projection? When you will get the money you know you need?
One of the things that we did with this project is we broke that first phase into three discrete phases. So you can really attach them to each of the domes. So what I call the show dome phase, the desert dome phase, and the tropical dome phase, which is interesting because we talked about the history of the domes, I mentioned they were opened in phases. Well, we're going to restore them in phases. And so for each of those phases, we have its own closing. So if you think of like a real estate closing, there's its own closing is attached to it. And by breaking it up in that way, it also allows us to maximize the tax credit financing. So we'll be able to secure additional funds by doing these phases. But with that, the show dome phase, which is projected to commence as soon as 2027, no later than 2028, that phase is a little under $52 million. So it's kind of front loaded where, you know, we're doing the show dome, but all of those additional amenities that we talked about are also included in that phase.
And so if you look at that, you know, with the county's contribution, tax credit financing, and then contributions, philanthropic contributions, we'll need, you know, that like other piece of the pie is about $20 million. So that includes philanthropic contributions, but also includes some additional public funding. And, you know, you put all that together, $52 million, and we'll be ready to, you know, break ground on that time frame that we discussed.
You had mentioned originally that the business model for the domes wasn't quite supporting it. How do you intend to change the actual business model? I know you mentioned that you're adding all of these amenities, but will it be enough to sustain the domes in the future where you're not going to have to ask for money?
Absolutely. And thank you for asking that question, because I think it's really important, especially we are a destination, right? A cultural attraction destination. We fit in that realm. And, you know, it's hard for entities to be able to create sustainable business models that, you know, those other cultural attractions that exist in a similar space. It's hard for them to create a sustainable business model because the expenses are just so huge. And so can you drive enough in revenue to be able to cover your expenses? I think what's really unique about us is that our expenses actually aren't that huge, right? So right now we have the number one expense is personnel, so people, and number two is the energy output. So a lot of that energy costs will be reduced as part of this plan and part of the restoration. The personnel expenses, where we will not go down on, we'll actually have more personnel coming on board to help create new programming and opportunities for the community. But when everything's said and done, and you look at our operating pro forma, the fact is, if we just turn up revenue slightly, so we're not talking about projecting that we're going to have 500,000 admissions, just 300,000 paid admissions, we're going to increase the admissions fee just slightly. We're going to have a larger gift shop. We're going to have concession sales. We're going to have event revenue. You put all of that together and it doesn't just cover our expenses, but leaves a surplus that we can put away for future maintenance needs, which is the key, right? Like right now we have been operating in such a way that we have a deficit budget each year and there's nothing left over for fixing the glass or fixing the seals or anything that's been happening over the last few decades. So by creating this business model, we're able to operate in the black. Part of that is because our collection, you know, it's valued at $3 million. But I mentioned we grow our own plant material. So a lot of those plants that you have in the show dome and even replacement plants that we have for the other two domes, they're grown on site. And seeds are very inexpensive. It's just the nature of our operating model is that our expenses are much less than, you know, other, you know, destination organizations. And we're going to continue that portion of our operations as we have done, and then really lean into creating new opportunities for us to drive on the revenue side.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
Honestly, I came to this endeavor to find a path forward for the domes.
Krista Beal Diefenbach takes a look at the Milwaukee domes 10 years from now.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back. I'm Libby Collins. Today's conversation is with Krista Beal Diefenbach, CEO of the Milwaukee Domes Alliance. As you look ahead, where do you see the domes in another 10 years?
It's interesting. I even think about, like from my own perspective, you know, like what my role will be. And honestly, I came to this endeavor to find a path forward for the domes. I knew that it was feasible. And we've brought on a team of people who have worked really, really hard to get us to this place. And I think about, like, what in 10 years, what would I want my relationship with the domes to be? And I can easily answer that. I'm going to come and visit often. I'm going to enjoy it along with all of the rest of Milwaukee County and beyond. I'm going to, attend fun new events and participate in all the programming that's going to be infused in this new version of the domes. You know, we will have docent tours and we're going to use what I call small T technology, But it's an opportunity for us to just interpret the gardens in a new way. So you'll walk in and you'll have an app that you can download and go on. There'll be an option of, you know, 5 different tours in the show dome that you can participate in. We're also going to be making the gardens much more interactive. So there'll be plant material you can touch and you can learn more about, and you can participate in it in that way. So I really look forward to that day where I get to be a guest along with you and just enjoy this amazing horticultural oasis.
Krista Beal Diefenbach, thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
We've been talking with Krista Beal Diefenbach, the CEO of the Milwaukee Domes Alliance, and what a history the Domes has. We learned how Lady Bird Johnson was there for the grand opening in 1965, and also some of the wonderful collections that are there in the Domes. Are they structurally sound? And how will they raise money in the future? Well, if you joined us late and you want to hear our entire conversation with Krista, go to WTMJ.com and share today's show with your friends and family. You'll also find a partial transcript courtesy of eCourt Reporters. For WTMJ Conversations, I'm Libby Collins.